What is going on, everybody? Jamie Shaw here, Absolute Basketball. Super excited for today's guest, the head coach of UC Riverside, Mike Magpio. How does that sound, first of all, to say head coach?
Oh, it's awesome, man. I mean, it's you know, every once in a while I'll sit back and think about it, and it's definitely a dream. But for the most part, in these first like 50 days that I've been head coach, it's been just been going, you know, morning to night nonstop. But now I've kind of gotten a little chance the last few days to sit back and think and just, you know, kind of smell the roses a little bit. And it's a great feeling.
That's good. And as you said, you know, you've been it for 50 days now. You've had a little bit of chance, as you said recently, to kind of smell the roses and stuff. How you doing with it? I mean, are you able to kind of to slow down for a second, actually, you know, live a little bit of life as well as run a program?
Yeah, actually, funny, my wife, who's 20 weeks pregnant now, we just took a little 2-day trip down to the water in La Jolla, and just drove down there and just kind of took 2 days to just relax and just sit on the beach a little bit. But it's been great. You know, our staff and myself, I'm real proud of us. Like, we got 100% retention in a coaching transition, which is really hard to do. So we have the full team coming back. We have the whole coaching staff completely committed and in on what we're trying to do. And so, you know, we've had just finished our summer, 6-week summer program virtually with our team, and all the guys are in, and now they're starting to trickle back. We have a couple of guys back from Australia, New Zealand. They're all just starting to trickle in over the next 2 to 3 weeks. We're in a quarter system, so we don't start school till October 1st.
I got you. So, you know, you've had quite the story, you know, getting into where you're at right now. But growing up in Hacienda Heights, California, how did you fall in love with the game of basketball?
Well, I'm Filipino, so that's been that story's been told. And so if you are a Filipino, it is our national sport. So you grow up with a basketball in your hands as a baby. My parents, my dad coached me growing up. Hacienda Heights is in Los Angeles, so we're huge, huge Laker fans. And it's just part of me, you know. And I was a pretty good player growing up. Wasn't good enough to play in college, and that's kind of why I started coaching. Mm-hmm. I started coaching junior high when I was at UC Santa Barbara, and then from there on, just kept coaching high school and somehow got to this level.
So, you know, who were some of your early coaching influences that you had?
Well, it's funny, like, so I was 15 and my dad's like, why don't you help me out coaching your little brother and your little sister's teams? And I kind of was just his assistant and just started coaching at a young age. And so I guess my dad would be number one. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I think it really matters. When I was young, I had really good baseball coaches and I had really good basketball coaches. And that it's crazy when you're that age from 8 years old to like 15, 16, having really good coaches really matters. And I kind of looked up to those guys. And, but, you know, as I kind of got older, growing up in LA, you got Pat Riley, Phil Jackson, two of the best ever. And then, of course, Eric Spoelstra, another, you know, the one Filipino in the NBA that we have, he's half Filipino. And Brad Stevens kind of got me thinking, okay, I could do it at the college level. Brad Stevens was in the business world, was at an insurance company at one point. And we, you know, he was a guy that I was like, oh, you know what, I think I can do it. And that's how I started writing letters to colleges and somehow got in with Kyle Smith at Columbia in 2010.
And you mentioned Brad Stevens being in insurance and stuff, because that's kind of where you went after graduating from UC Santa Barbara with a business economics degree. You jump right into the business world and you were the CEO of a multi-million dollar real estate firm. You know, for those 7 years that you did that, like, how did you did you do that because that's like the path you felt you were supposed to take, or what was that whole 7 years like?
You know, when I was younger, I used to write like whatever the three professions I wanted to be, and I was like really ambitious. I either want to be like president of the United States, CEO of Microsoft, or CEO of Disney. Those are the three things I'd always tell my mom. And but so when I graduated, I was actually in a real big corporate job at Comerica Bank in middle market commercial lending, and I did that for a couple of years. And funny thing, I was playing pickup basketball on Hermosa Beach and some guy won a bunch of games with, and I was walking out to his car and he was driving this really ridiculous BMW. And I was like, what do you do? And he's like, oh, I run a real estate company down the street in Redondo Beach. And I went to go see him that week. I put in my 2 weeks with my old company and started working for him. And I started working for him for a year, realized, started to learn it. It was during the boom, so everybody was doing well, to be fair. You know, like a lot of people, you could have been running a real estate company. And, so I ended up starting a real estate company after a year learning it from this this guy, and I started it with my best friend and business partner, my best friend from college, and we started a company, and it just happened to grow, and it was during the right time. And so we kind of went through the boom, and then we went through the bust in 07, 08. But I was always coaching at the same time. I always coached a high school team, a local high school team, Redondo Union High School, Newport Harbor in Newport Beach, and Elisa Miguel in Orange County. And so that was always my hobby during like November to February. And the joke with my business partner was that's when our company suffered. I was like so into the basketball season. We'd have a loss, and I wouldn't be locked in at work the next morning. But you know, parallel lives. Like you're coaching your company just the way you would coach your team. You know, we had a 40 employees at the time. That was as big as our company got, and very similar. I learned just as much coaching that company as I did coaching a basketball team.
And then you know, so you're coaching the high school teams and all that stuff during the thing, I guess, to kind of keep the itch, cure the itch, I guess, that you have for it. But then all of a sudden you start writing letters to these coaches and stuff. As you said, you got on with Kyle Smith at Columbia. You know, was making the transition of giving up a multi-million dollar business and jumping into kind of the bottom rung of coaching, not bottom rung, but you know what I'm saying, starting a career all over. Was that a tough decision, and kind of what all went into that for you?
Yeah, it was. I mean, I told you this story. I think I interviewed with you when I was coaching at Campbell.
Yes.
And I told the story before, but it was a hard decision. You know, I wrote a letter. I was actually going to get my master's in real estate at NYU because we had survived the real estate crash of 07, 08. And we had our company. Now we weren't at 40 employees anymore. We were at like 15. Mm-hmm. So I'm like, yeah, I got to learn. Like, if we can't let this happen to us again, I got to expand our business, blah, blah, blah. So I wrote letters to colleges all up in New York City, every single one, NYU, any D2, D1, D3, and Kyle Smith responded, and he had me meet him at a coffee shop. And actually what he told me was like, don't do it. Like, well, then this is what I tell to all the young coaches, don't do it. You're going to start at the bottom. And I'm like, no, I think I can do it. And he's like, yeah, I know you're a sponge, blah, blah, blah. And he said, you know, why don't you come volunteer for us at our camp next month? It was June, so I did. I came back. I wasn't starting school yet. I flew back from LA, started volunteering, and like the coaching staff really took to me. Carlin Hartman was associate head coach, and they just took over the job. Carlin Hartman's now at Oklahoma, and Kobe Altman was on staff, and he's now the general manager of the Cavs. So, you know, it was a star-studded staff at the time. I didn't even realize. And I was just coming in, and they, you know, I just hustled my butt off. And Kyle said, okay, if you really, really want to do this, here's the offer. It's director of operations. You're starting at the very, very bottom. I didn't know what that meant. You know, I didn't play college, so I didn't know what director of operations is. Basically, like you said, the bottom rung. Mm-hmm. And you're really not allowed to coach, really. It's a coaching staff, but you're not allowed to be on the floor yet. But I didn't know. I just was like, oh, my God, here's a chance. And he said, if you want it, you got to be here in 2 weeks. And I took it, you know, and it was crazy. Basically, he's like, you can't go to NYU. And I don't know what you're going to do about your company. I ended up selling my half of the company to my business partner a year later. So, yeah, it was a tough decision, but it was my chance. You know, if I really wanted to do this, I had to jump in now at that point, and I did.
And then going from, 2010 to 2017, you go up from director of basketball operations to being a full-blown assistant. You're on the road for both Columbia and then Campbell. What all did you learn, or how did those two steps, Columbia and Campbell, how did they differ? And then what all did you take away, I guess, from both stops?
Oh, Campbell. My 3 years at Campbell under Coach McGeehan were tremendous for me as far as my growth. You know, I was at Columbia, and that was my only coaching tree. You know, I didn't have a coaching tree. My coaching tree was Kyle Smith. Mm-hmm. And so we had success there. It took us like 3-4 years to build it at Columbia. And during that time, like Kyle Smith and Chris Mooney at University of Richmond were very, very close. They coached together at Air Force. So, and Carlin Hartman had worked at Richmond. And then we took over, we hired Kevin Hubdy, who was a player at Richmond, as our grad assistant, who became an assistant, who's now associate head coach at San Francisco, one of my best friends. So there was we were married to each other in a weird way. And Kevin McGeehan had the job at Campbell, and he lost a guy, and he actually offered me a position, and Kevin McGeehan is a great recruiter, and he recruited me down there, picked me up at the airport, did the whole deal. And, you know, I fell in love with Campbell because, number one, it was completely different. It was just opposite. Columbia, it was academic, no scholarships, really challenging Ivy League, beautiful, oh, great place, New York City, obviously. And then I go to Campbell, which they, beautiful arena, you know, the South, completely different. New York City, people are mean. The South, everybody says hi to you. And, you know, I just scholarships, and I wanted to prove that I could coach at a different, you know, I wanted to expand my tree, mm-hmm. and I wanted to prove that I could coach at a different, it's not a different level. It's just a different world, you know, completely yeah. different recruiting world, and coaching completely different guys. And went to Campbell for 3 years, and it was awesome, man. Like, Coach McGeehan really allowed me to grow and allowed me to coach there. And I'll always be grateful to him for it.
And then, speaking of kind of a different world, so your first job is at Columbia, you know, in New York City or New York. The second job is down in the South in North Carolina. And your third job in San Francisco on the other side of the complete country. Kind of what all went into, obviously, Kyle Smith and everything, that tree, but going from on the road to an ops position, what all went into that decision? And then, you know, how did the move go from coast to coast?
Yeah, that was – well, I'm from Southern California, so yeah. – That was a pool. So we had – so Kyle Smith called me and he said – and he had been there for a year and he asked me if I'd want to come back and start operations. And at first I was like, no. Like, I love it here. I'm coaching. You know, I'm on the floor coaching. I love coaching. It's what I love to do. That's my passion. In between those four lines in a practice, that's my favorite thing in life. And he's like, well, if you want to get back to California and this would be your chance. Like, you'll hope that one of our people in our coaching tree get a head coach job and they'll end up hiring you, or you'll be next assistant here, blah, 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 blah. And, you know, I thought about it really long and hard. It was tough, man. Coach McGeehan and Coach Thomas and those guys, I was really close to those guys. And I thought, you know what, building my career close to my family would be really cool. And my wife, who I met in New York City, actually is from Southern California. And funny enough, she graduated from UC Riverside. Mm-hmm. And, I just thought it was a good opportunity to be close to family. If you can like right now, I'm living the dream. If you can coach where you're from, that's the dream right there. Yeah. Like, and right now, currently, I'm living the dream, because you never know. You have to be geographically flexible. That's what Kobe Altman used to say in this industry. And so I jumped and I went, and those were like my closest friends, Todd Golden, who's now the head coach. He was in my wedding, and Kyle was in my wedding. And so it was a really cool opportunity to go work back with my Columbia guys at a little higher level in the WCC and challenge ourselves against the Gonzagas and St. Mary's and BYUs and get back to the West Coast.
So you're very active in the Asian coaching community. You started the Asian Coaches Association and even became the first Division I head basketball coach of Asians in Scent whenever you became the head coach of UC Riverside. How important is it to you to trailblaze within the Asian coaching community?
Okay, I got to give credit now. So I've done my research. Rex Walters was head coach, and he's half Asian, so he's Asian descent. And then in 1940s, there was a Japanese head football and head basketball coach at Arizona State. But we'll say this generation, yeah, I am definitely the first Filipino and first full Asian in this generation. But yeah, it's funny. In 2012, it was Kyle Smith and Kobe Altman's. They were sitting in the office there. It was their idea. They were part of the Jewish Coaches Association. They're like, why don't you start the Filipino Coaches Association? I'm like, there'd be two of us. It'd be me and Spolstra. And so they're like, so let's do the Asian Coaches Association. And, you know, the first one we had, I just threw a little event at the Final Four in Houston in 2012. We had like six Asian coaches show up, 13 total guys show up. But you know what? I stuck with it. And the next year grew a little more. And now we had Spolstra come by 2 years ago, and he was playing the Timberwolves, and we've grown to 150 to 200 people come to every single one. And so it's something that I'm proud of. And like, now what's crazy about this coronavirus time is that we kind of gotten the Zoom going, and now we've seen like the women's Asian coaches and the men's Asian coaches, and it's grown where our weekly Zooms turn into, we get anywhere from like 60 to 100 plus Asian coaches every single week. And so they're out there. And then I tell him the same thing that Kyle told me. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't do it. Don't coach. It's not as great as you think. You're not making any money. You're working for free. But, you know, we got a lot of hungry young Asian coaches out there. So really proud to lead it. But, you know, it's just part of the who I am.
Mm-hmm. And then so I got firsthand to see the Kai Soto thing this past year and how just – unbelievably beloved he is in the Philippines and all that type of stuff. I mean, everything that we ever did of him, just, you know, it was awesome. Right. Are you, do you kind of carry that same type of thing with the Philippine nation as well?
Yeah. You know, I've done so many interviews. When this went down, I did some local Riverside interviews, Southern California interviews. But when I got the head coach job, I've done probably 15 interviews in Philippines, ESPN, the Manila Times. I mean, that's where it really caught fire, just because I'm the first Filipino college coach, Division I college coach. So yeah, I mean, and you'll see with guys like Kai Soto, and then there was a guy named Kobe Paras who came mm-hmm. here, and he went to play to Creighton, UCLA Creighton, and didn't quite make it to where he wanted to go to. But these guys have like so many Instagram, Twitter followers, you'd be shocked. Like Kai Soto he's already a superstar over there. Yeah. Like he's hugely popular. The whole country roots for him, similar to what they're gonna do for me. Hopefully, if we can play a game here, I can coach a game. Right now, they're rooting for me already. They give me all this praise, and I'm like, I haven't even coached a practice yet. You know, like I really want to coach a practice here. But yeah, you know, I'm grateful. I try to stay humble because there's some great coaches over there in the Philippines. I've been out there a couple times. When I was at Campbell, Coach McGee let me go out there and see the landscape of Philippine mm-hmm. basketball. And there's some really good coaches out there that I've stayed in touch with. And Kai, they're all like hoping that Kai Soto, they hope that he can make it to the NBA. And I think he's got a really good chance.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess kind of steering back, you talk about, you know, if you can get on the floor and all that type of stuff. Well, if you do get back on the floor, you return five of your top six leading scorers coming into next year. And it seems that you're in a pretty good place, stability-wise, with the program year over year to have a little bit of success. So what are the expectations that you have? Obviously, you don't want to shoot them through the roof and NCAA champions and stuff, but, like, you know, what are the expectations you have coming into year one?
Yeah, we have standards here, and the expectations go along with it. And there's a reason why we've had success at an accelerated pace like we've had. We've built this into a winning program in 2 years, and a lot of the credit goes to David Patrick. You know, Coach Patrick has set this thing up and recruited the right guys. And now he's left me with a full cupboard of really good talent, really good size. And so far in this transition, we have 100% retention. So we got all the guys committed to it. So the expectations are to go compete for a championship in the Big West. Like that's, we got a lot of confidence that we have the right pieces. And
so you return a Renze Chittum, who was led you both in scoring and rebounding this past season. You know, coming out of kind of quarantine and all that type of stuff, what type of leadership and what are you expecting kind of coming out of him?
Well, Renze is a special player for us. He's a transfer from Washington State. And I actually drove up last week to go visit with him and his family just to kind of reinforce the relationship and kind of build off what we have. And we always had a really good relationship in his first year here. But the guy just has a talent to put the ball in the basket, loves hoops. He's a hoops junkie. And he plays so hard, but he's an inside out threat. He shot over 40% from three last year, but he leads us in rebounding. Like you said, he can score close to the basket and he can score from the post as well. So we're going to have to put him in spots to really make the defense react to him outside, inside, in the mid post. And so he's probably our best weapon as far as a guy that can go get a basket on his own.
And then coming in this season, you have transfers Jock Perry and then Flynn Cameron from DePaul. And then you have Will Tattersall coming in as a high school senior. What can you tell us about the newcomers and where they're looking to fit in at?
Well, I'll start with Will. Will Tattersall comes from the Center of Excellence in Australia. So, as you know, we have nine players from down under, Australia and New Zealand. It's we're the most in Division I to have any – just the international guys. But definitely down under is our point of difference, where we've gotten a lot of guys. Of course, David Patrick is a big part of that. My associate head coach, Mike Zeppel, who's from Australia, is a big part of that. But Will Tattersall comes to us from the Center of Excellence, which produces all the Olympians in Australia, like Matthew Dellavedova, Joe Ingles, Patty Mills, and whatnot. And he'll be like that 6'5", skilled 3-2 who can shoot it lefty. And then we have Flynn Cameron, transfer point guard from DePaul, and he's also on the New Zealand national team, 6'3". Athletic, fast, lefty, who can penetrate and make plays for others, and coming down a level a little bit from DePaul, he's gonna have a lot of success here. And then Jock Perry, big 7'1" kid from St. Mary's, which we run a very similar program to St. Mary's. That's our coaching tree, and very similar program, so he's gonna fit right in. He's gonna be big for our league, and that's how you got to be big in our league to win. UC Irvine's big, UC Santa Barbara's big, and we're big, and Hawaii's big. So Jock Perry just adds to that. He's super skilled, low post scorer, but can make plays and can shoot it a little bit. Shoots 40% from three as well.
So you mentioned kind of, you know, you have nine players on your team from Australia and stuff. How have you been dealing with that during quarantine and then even so getting them back to campus and everything?
It's been a big challenge. So we kind of put together this 6 week – when I got the job, I said, listen, I want you guys to think of this summer program like we were here – in person doing a 6-week summer program. So we taught as best we could in film. We did some workouts. Our Zooms are at night here because we got to be, it's morning over there. So that's a big challenge. And then it really was a challenge to make sure that these guys got to the embassy and got all their stuff cleared as they're starting to trickle in. We just had our big 7-footer from New Zealand, Callum McRae. He just got here last week. Dragon Elkaz, our 6'5 shooter from Australia, just got here yesterday. So they're starting to trickle back in. And I've been patient because we're on the quarter system and we kind of don't know what's going to happen in college basketball as far as like November. But right now we still, you know, Pac-12 camp, but we still have a November 14th opening night date, and that's what we're kind of targeted towards, and they'll all be here in the next 2 to 3 weeks. And I'm excited to get them back. I mean, I can't wait to practice.
I bet. You know, and it's kind of different everywhere. You know, some's regulated by state, some by conference, some by specific school and all that type of stuff. Where do y'all stand on getting kids back to school and playing and all that stuff?
Well, the UC system and the Cal State system are all state-run schools, like very similar to like a UNC and what you guys got your state schools in North Carolina. But here in California, the governor has been very safe and cautious, and so that's why the UCs, most of the UCs and Cal States are not open, and they're just waiting, going through all the waiting for the governor to release new guidelines and whatnot. So we wait patiently. But the anxious, you know, we're getting anxious and we want to get back and we want to get our gym open and all that. And I've talked to the athletic director daily and she's working it with the chancellor and whatnot, but you know, safety, you know, on the other hand, the safety of our guys matters the most. And so that's what they've focused on and making sure that all the protocols will be in place. But as far as we are probably the most conservative of all the whole country, I would say our UCs and Cal States. I'm not sure what's going on in the Northeast with the Patriot League and Ivy League schools. Maybe the Ivy League is the most because they've canceled 2020 games or fall games. But yeah, we're pretty conservative. I hope we can get back. I'm looking forward to it. I really hope so.
And then kind of everywhere you've been, where you've been on the floor, you've been a defensive coordinator and recruiting coordinator. You know, kind of what can we expect from a Mike McPio coach team?
Yeah, I've coached the defense at Campbell and I coached the defense here at Riverside. Coach Patrick was, you know, we were partners, I would say, but he definitely let me run the defense and we had a lot of success. So we're going to be gritty. We're going to be big at every position. So we don't have a guy shorter than 6'3 on our team. We are big at every single position. We got 2 7-footers. We got 6 guys over 6'10. So we are big. That's kind of how we built it, because that's what you need to do in our league. And then we're just going to have a great culture and a really high-performing program. It's just where I learned everything that I know through Kyle Smith, and we run this very similar program, and we all come from the St. Mary's coaching tree and whatnot. And it's just really running a program that's organized, and we know exactly what we're doing through every season of a year, and it builds on each other, and then we're going to shoot a lot. You know, we do a lot of shooting in practice and in our workouts. So hopefully, you know, we – have a free-flowing offense. I think that's where we have to make our biggest jump this year. And we can hold on to that gritty defensiveness that we had the last year.
And this isn't really a tie-in to anything that we've already talked about or something, but it's a unique situation out toward California and everything, where the state of California passed, you know, the pay-for-play type law and all that type of stuff. How do you see that? I don't really know how to ask the question, but my curiosity flows with how do you see that playing out and how do you see that working?
Yeah, man, it's going to take time. I think, obviously, it passed in California, and we were like, what does that mean for us? It's not aligned with the NCAA rule yet. And so that's our administration was, like, figuring that out, obviously, before all this other stuff hit. And it's not like – not that I disagree with a lot of the NIL stuff and all, you know, pay for play, all of it. It's just you got to pick your timing, you got to pick your battles. Like, you know, the Pac-12 players and the Big 10 players coming together to ask for some revenue sharing during this time. There's no chance that was going to get done right now. Mm-hmm. Right now about safety and like handling the coronavirus protocols and whatnot. But I don't know. It's tough. I see both sides, you know, and one, I get it. You know, I don't disagree with it, but on the other side, you are getting a $70,000 a year scholarship. So I get where the NCAA positions themselves, and as much as you want to say they're professional players, you're only here for 4 years. Mm-hmm. So you lose your leverage. Like they leave, and now it's a whole new group of kids who are coming in trying to fight the same battle. You have to really get organized and build a union community, and I don't know who's going to do that versus the NCAA, who is powerful. But this is really interesting what's going to happen right now, right? With football we got, is the NCAA going to hold on and stay and stay together and be able to still, we're seeing the SEC is pretty powerful. You know, like, and we knew that. We already knew that. The Power Five are pretty powerful. But it, now the Power Five is broken to football. It's really interesting. I'm really intrigued to see how it all goes down.
I agree with you fully, and I think this could be a turning point for the future this season and how things are handled. So it's going to be very interesting, just as you said, just to sit back and watch and see kind of how everything plays out.
Because football already has it, right? You have Division 1A, and then you have of like 100 and some teams, and then Division 1AA, right, like has the rest of the Division 1. And so basketball, for all intents and purposes, like we get paid guarantee games. We don't really function without those guarantee games as a mid-major university, right?
Sure. Like
so it's just we're all competing for the same championship, but we're not competing with the same resources, obviously.
No doubt. So I guess that kind of wraps everything up here. I'd be crazy not to say that it's been unbelievably exciting to watch your rise. You know, keep the friendship with you going after you leaving Campbell, going out to San Francisco, now at UC Riverside, and see where everything is going. But it's been awesome to see. You know, it's good to see that good things happen to good people.
Thanks, Jamie. I appreciate it, man.
Yeah, absolutely. And I can't wait to see what the future has for you and everything. Appreciate you spending a couple minutes here with me. Do you have anything that you want to leave the people with, any fans or anything like that?
Oh, no, man. Let's all just pray and do what we need to do to get back to the court. I mean, that's all I care about is give me a practice to coach.
Yeah.
I just want to coach a practice and start there. I want to talk hoops. You know, I want to talk basketball. You know, I want to plan basketball. I want to plan our fall and winter practices. And all I want to do is just be on that sideline coaching a game and coaching a practice. So, but yeah, thank you so much, Jamie. I appreciate it. It's crazy. We've known each other. I remember you came to visit Campbell. I think we were running camp and had a practice and you just came by and I got to know you over time. So impressed by what you've been doing. Keep doing it. And thank you for having me.
Yeah, absolutely, too. And you'll have me staying up at 1 and 2 o'clock in the morning watching those ESPN Plus games with you. So, absolutely, awesome, man. Well, good luck. Thank you for joining us. Guys, thank you for tuning in here on the Absolute Basketball Experience. I'm Jamie Shaw from Mac Magpio. We'll see you later.